Hi, my name is Paul Grogan, and welcome to episode 57 of the All New Gaming Rules podcast. This episode is an audio version of the live Q&A that went out in November 2023. A big thank you to all of my Patreon supporters for making this podcast possible, and if you want to support me directly, you can do so at patreon.com/gamingrules. And now, on with the show. Right, I think we are live. Good afternoon, everybody. Thank you very much for joining me. Slightly different live Q&A today, because Vicky's not home yet. We've had to bring it forward from a Wednesday to a Tuesday, because Vicky is at jewellery courses on a Wednesday. And we were going to do this last week, when Vicky was off work, because it was GridCon. She took a couple of days off work after GridCon. Thank you very much, Chrissy, for letting me know the AV is okay. Except way too tired last week, so we moved it to this week. And then, of course, I realised, oh, wait a minute, Vicky's not home at 5 o'clock. So she'll be home soon. She's on her way home right now, which means it's just me. Oh, dear. I'm sure we'll be fine. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to start off, as usual, answering some of the questions that I've had over on the Guild, over on Board Game Geek, which if you are not a member of the Guild, please head on over to Board Game Geek, Guild number 2258, and you can join up and make sure you subscribe when you do. So, yeah. In the next 10 minutes, Vicky will be coming home. I've set her laptop up already. And she'll be there. And at that point, she'll be going through the chat. I will let her know that there's already been a number of questions which she will have to transfer over to my working document. Now, the other thing is, I normally spend about an hour and a half setting things up this afternoon and going through all of the list of questions that I've been asked beforehand on the Guild and doing a little bit of preparation for the answers. However, as some of you will know, I've been struggling with sleeping issues and tiredness again this week. And I had a lie down earlier on and fell asleep for half an hour, which means I haven't done any of that. So apologies, but the questions that I've been asked in advance on the Guild, I am now going to be answering them without any preparation. So let's see what we've got. The first one is from Monica, who is asking, what's my eyesight? And have I found it more challenging over the years to read rule books when the writing is small, or there is a page full of writing and no pictures to break the writing up? So we've got a few questions there. Let's answer that first. These are reading glasses. Well, no, these are varifocals. So I can see fine at long distance, which means I think I'm long-sighted. I have issues seeing anything up close. And it started about 10 years ago. I've had perfect vision for most of my life. And then it started going when I was about sort of 42, 43 years old. And it was fairly gradual at first. But basically, I was finding that I was unable to read anything and had to keep moving it further away, at which point it was too small and I couldn't read it. And I struggled for years because I really didn't want to have to wear glasses. And over many, many years, it got worse and worse and worse and worse to the point where I was using reading glasses. So I bought a cheap pair. Well, I had a few pair of cheap reading glasses, which I bought for like £1.50 or £2 from Aldi. And they were fine. They were great. But it meant that I spent, and many of you will know this, got a bit of toast in my throat, is I spent years wearing glasses on the end of my nose like this because I couldn't read anything up close, so I wore the reading glasses on the end of my nose, and then I would read things like that. That's what I did for years. And then probably about, I don't know, was it 3-4 years ago, as it continued to get worse, I was finding that I couldn't read anything on the teleprompter. So for some of my videos, basically the how to play videos, I have a script which I read from and I have a teleprompter, which is about 6 feet away from me. Unfortunately, it got to the point where I couldn't actually see anything on the teleprompter without my glasses on, and I couldn't see anything with the reading glasses on. So I ended up having to go to an optician's, get an eye test, which is why I've got varifocals. Now, I've had these for about, I don't know, what, 2 years? And my eyes are continuing to get worse, which means these are no longer strong enough for reading. So I'm actually starting to struggle again to read, and I'm having to literally look through the bottom of the glasses, and even then it's quite hard. So that's where my eyesight is currently. It will probably continue to get worse according to the opticians for a few more years yet. But have I found it more challenging over the years to read rule books when the writing is small? Yes. And not just rule books, but cards, card text. If the card text is really small, I used to have no problems with it whatsoever. Now I do. Going back 10 years, here's how I used to paint miniatures. If I had a miniature that I wanted to paint, he says, picking up a huge miniature. Let's pick up this one instead. Right. If I had a miniature that I wanted to paint 10 years ago, I would literally hold it there. I would hold it 6 inches away from my eyes and I would be able to see it in clear detail. And obviously, I can't do that anymore. That's just a complete blurry mess. So I have a pair of extra magnifying goggles for painting. I can't wear these. These are not good enough for painting. I need to hold it close. And yeah, they're not good enough. So now the second part of your question is, do I find it hard to read rule books when there are no pictures to break the writing up? That's a separate discussion as far as I'm concerned. Vicky's here. Hello. I don't have your headphones. I don't know where your headphones are, but we're all ready to go. And there's been a whole load of questions already. So if you want to scroll back, you okay? Cold? Right. So yeah, what was I saying? Yeah, if there is a page of writing in the rule book which is not broken up by pictures, then that's a bad rule book. That's a bad layout for a rule book. So yeah. Right, next question from Gavin. Is there a rule or a class of rules in a game that really annoys you if you see it in a rule set? Actually, there is. And I've talked about this quite a lot over the last 10 or so years. And in most of these games where this is a rule, I house rule it. And it's a useful time to talk about this because Shipyard, a 2009 game from Vladimir Suhi, has just had a new version. And I've covered it on the channel last week or the week before. I can't remember. Last week, I think. And Shipyard uses an absolutely fantastic method for choosing your end of game scoring cards. And if you're one of my regular viewers, you might want to switch off for 2 minutes because I have spoken about this multiple times over the last few years. Any game where it gives you two or more cards at the start of the game and says, before the game's even started, you must choose one of these to be your end of game scoring card. Nope, hate it. Absolutely hate it. I think as a design choice, I think it's an extremely bad design choice. And I much, much prefer the way Shipyard does it. And other games do it as well. And one of the most recent games that's used it is Ark Nova. In Ark Nova, you get two final scoring cards. And at a certain point in the game, which is usually about halfway through-ish, players are forced to choose which one they want. And that is a brilliant rule. And I think Shipyard was the first game that used this rule. And the reason for it is it should be obvious, but if it's not obvious, making a decision at the start of the game without the game having even started, I think is a really bad idea. So personally, I would house rule that in almost every game that I see to say, here's two end of game scoring cards, either halfway through or at the end of the game, whatever, you are going to score one of these. But you don't have to make that decision at the start. That, for me, improves the game. And that is a house rule that I use. So it does annoy me when I see a rule that here's a couple of, you know, where you have to do it as part of setup, because I think it's lazy game design. And I think it's, I personally, and this, you know, most games use that method. So maybe I'm missing something. But I think if you're a designer and you are aware of this other method to not force people to choose their card at the start of the game, then you've got to have a good reason for not using it, in my opinions. Next question from Gavin. Are you pro or against rules based on flavour? Oh, this is a good question. I think the best example of this would be the Birkenhead Link in Brass, Lancashire. Brass. It is supposed to represent the ferry across the Mersey to Birkenhead, but it's a glaring exception amongst all other rules in the game. This is a really, really good example. In fact, it's probably the perfect example. So for those of you that don't know, Brass Lancashire used to be called Brass. And Brass Lancashire came out and it was a tweaked version of Brass. But Brass is the original game. And there is one big exception to the way that all of the rest of the rules work. And that is the Birkenhead to Liverpool ferry. So much so that they got rid of that from the new version. So that rule doesn't exist in the new version of the game, but it did exist in the original game. And because of the thematic integration of the game, the rules for that link worked differently. And it did cause a little bit of confusion, because any exceptions to rules always cause a little bit of confusion. And Gavin is asking me whether I am pro or against it. I think I'm pro it. I think, within reason. Now, if you've got a game which has 10 different exceptions to the rules because of flavour, then there's a problem. But if you've got a couple of things in there that are in there for thematic reasons, I love thematic rules. Whilst I am a Eurogame player, there is nothing that makes me happier than playing a game when there is a thematic reason for that game, for that rule to be in there. So yeah, I think I'm pro that. Let me know what you think. If you're watching this live, let me know in the chat what you think. And if you're watching this back afterwards, leave me a comment and let me know. Give me an example of a rule in a game which is an exception to the normal rules, which is in there for thematic reasons, similar to the one that Gavin mentioned. Right, next question. Questions from Brian. So I already know what these questions are going to be like. What is my expert opinion on raspberry Jaffa cakes? I think we've got some raspberry Jaffa cakes downstairs. So at GridCon, we were given a number of packs of various flavoured Jaffa cakes. Thank you very much to everybody who brought them. And there is a pack of raspberry Jaffa cakes downstairs. My expert opinion on them, because I think I've had them before. Vicky's not sure. Okay, I'm going to say I liked them, but I can't guarantee that I've actually had them. I need a spreadsheet of all of the different Jaffa cake flavours so I can tick them off. So I vaguely remember having them, but ask me next month, Brian, and they may have been opened. Have we tried the Walker's Christmas pudding flavoured crisps? I thought we had. What were them ones that Mark and Sally brought round last month? I think I've had them. It was definitely some... Was it mulled wine flavour? Vicky thinks no. I think yes. I think we've had. Okay, apparently we haven't. So no, haven't tried them. Next question. Will you be getting any biscuit advent calendars this year? E.g. the Walker's shortbread one. No advent calendars. The only advent calendar that we've got is the escape room, the exit one, which will be starting when? Friday, starting out of Friday. Are there any board games you particularly like to play on the run up to Christmas? Nope. Christmas for me, I don't really do Christmas that much. Vicky's the one who does all of the preparations for Christmas. I don't really get into the Christmas spirit that much, and I don't really do anything myself. So I have no plans to do any special games on the run up to Christmas. But Brian says that he enjoys the DVG solitaire war game, Elves Under Hoof, where you play as Santa's reindeer fighting off crazed elves. And if you're interested, it is free to download at this time of year. So if you're interested in that, it sounds like it's a solo war game called Elves Under Hoof. Google it. It's on the DVG website, I believe. But no plans to do any special Christmas-themed games for me. Next question from Harold. He said he's lost count of how many times he's watched my playthrough of Hoplomachus Victorum. He then watched my top 10 of 2022, and he got near the top, and then he went, why wasn't Hoplomachus Victorum in there? So I'll tell you what, when I was making my top 10 games of 2022, which has been published, it came out a few months ago, so if you're interested in what, in my opinion, is the best games of 2022, you can check that out on the channel. Hoplomachus Victorum is not in there. And it was going to be in there, but the reason I removed it is I use the BGG release dates for the games. And Hoplomachus Remastered and Hoplomachus Victorum, according to BGG, is 2023. I hope it is, because I remember going through this at the time, and I remember looking and thinking, oh, wait a minute, that's 2023. Now, I was lucky enough to get a copy of it at the end of 2022. But again, if somebody can confirm it for me in the chat, the BGG release date for Hoplomachus Victorum was 2023. So you'll have to wait till probably somewhere around Q2 of next year to find out if it's in my top 10. It totally is. Harold is also asking that I recently covered 20 Strong from Chip Theory Games. Will we see more Chip Theory Games content in future? More Hoplomachus Victorum, more Too Many Bones Unbreakable. My standard answer to all of this. I love some games from Chip Theory Games. I love Cloud Spire and wish I could play it more. I love Hoplomachus Victorum and wish I could play it more. I enjoy 20 Strong and want to play with the other decks. I don't have the time at the moment. So my Patreon supporters, as usual, will be influencing me on what I cover on the channel. But it's just a case of too many games, too many bones, too many games, not enough time. I would like to get back to Too Many Bones as well. I do have some of the new stuff. It's still in a box downstairs. I haven't even unboxed it. Scary. But yeah, would like to. Thank you for confirming that Victorian was indeed 2023. Whew, right. Next question from Keith. Do I watch any games-related YouTube channels? Not normally, but there are some that I do. I have very limited time. I have almost no free time. And the free time that I do have, I try to listen to as many audiobooks as I can. I'm an audiobook listener. I wish I had more time to listen to more audiobooks. But the only time that I get chance really to listen to audiobooks are when I'm at the gym or when I'm tidying the house. If I'm tidying the house, I will put on some kind of half hour, 45 minute audiobook or something like that. So time to actually watch other people's YouTube channels is very, very limited. Saying that, there are a few people that do live streams. And if I'm at the computer and I see that they're live streaming, I will pop in and say hello. So some of my favorite channels are Tom Heath, Slicker Drips. Tom does a lot of great videos. Covers a lot of similar games to me, but a lot of different ones as well. Tom occasionally does live streams. Derek from Kanji Studios. Got to know Derek over the last 12 months, and he's a great guy. And his live streams are really good. Subscribe to these channels if you get a chance. Mike Dennis from Ready Steady Play. They do a lot of live streams as well. I do watch bits of Rado's videos, but I'm not a Twitch user. I really don't like the Twitch interface whatsoever. And I don't think... I think Rado does his live streams on Twitch, so I don't watch them there. I would occasionally watch them back afterwards. So I don't sit down and watch anybody else's videos in their entirety. I'll dip in and dip out. One of the other channels that I watch is Nithranya, so Branislav. He does some great videos, and he's just recently released his latest vlog, which I do want to watch. I've got it queued up. Again, I'll probably have that on in the background as I'm tidying up or something like that. So yeah, a few channels that I do watch. Right, next question from Keith. How many towns or countries did you visit during house hunting before deciding on Columpton? How many towns or countries? One country, England. But towns and countries, we did a few. We did Exeter, we did Tiverton, we did all around the Exeter area. But more, we did Bradninch. Did we do Crediton? I don't remember we did Crediton. I don't even remember doing Tiverton. It was so long ago now. But it was basically around the Exeter area. We probably saw about 4 or 5 different towns or something like that. Because there was 2 or 3 in Exeter. There was 2 in Columpton. There was definitely 1 or 2 in Bradninch. I remember going to one. I think I went to one in Tiverton without you. There were a few that I went to on my own on the way back from work. But yeah. Right. Next question from Graham. What's the best thing about running a games convention? I think the best thing was 2 things. The best thing is all of the happy people that are there playing games. And so many people came up to us and said, you know, thank you very much for running this. This is fantastic. This is great. But yeah, running the convention, basically putting on something where people can congregate. And what's happened with GridCon, and I think this is one of the plus points of GridCon, is a lot of people go to GridCon and it feels like it's a very family-friendly, not family-friendly, it feels like it's family. With the way that the Patreon support has built up, there is a large portion of Patreon supporters at GridCon. People have got to know each other over the years and have become, you know, a bit like a second family, and seeing them meeting up And, you know, it warms my heart and it makes me feel quite emotional when I look around and I see, oh, it's not just there's a group of people playing games. It's there's a group of people that know each other and have become friends through the patron. And there they are sitting there and having fun and playing games. So that's really great to see. And this year we had people coming over from America, people coming over from Kuwait, people coming from Spain, all other parts, you know, Netherlands, Germany, Iceland, Sweden. Yeah, we had people from all over the place coming. And it was just really, really great to see that happen. The second thing is the fact that we raised an incredible amount of money for charity, which does have a feel-good factor to it. We raised over £6,000 for charity. Yeah, so, you know, that's a good thing about running it, even though that's a set kind of... You don't have to do that to run the convention. We could run the convention without the charity raffle, but... And part of me is thinking maybe we should, because it's a massive amount of work. But, yeah, what's the worst thing about running a games convention? The worst thing for me must be the liaison with the hotel. Now, I'm not saying the hotel is bad, because I think the hotel is good. The hotel is a good venue, but there were a number of issues in the weeks leading up to GridCon, which caused me to end up working probably 4 hours a day every day for about the 2 weeks beforehand. That really impacted my work. It impacted my stress levels and everything else. And now that we're back from GridCon, we have, unfortunately, some difficult discussions to have with the hotel. And that is effectively, it's confrontation. And I don't like confrontation. Now, it's not that we're going to go down and beat them up, but it is a professional relationship that we have with the venue. The venue let us down on things that we'd agreed on, which were put in writing, and they made a number of mistakes that I'm not happy with them making, because we made it very, very clear to them certain things. So that is a difficult discussion that I need to have with the hotel. Yeah, that's probably the worst part of it. The other worst part of it is the amount of time it takes to unpack. We haven't unpacked yet, so the unpacking hasn't been done. There's still stuff everywhere in boxes, and we just haven't had the time to do it. What games did I see being played that made me really, really want to play them rather than be running a games convention? Oh, God, loads. Voidfall, for one. Voidfall was played an extraordinary amount of times. There was a lot of games being played that I really, really wanted to play. But I was able to just sort of, you know, blank off from that. But looking around, especially some games in the Hot Games area... you know, there's some games in the Hot Games area that I've only played once or twice that I really wanted to play again. Plantanubo, I wanted to play that again. Evenfall, I haven't had a chance to play yet. I will be playing it this Friday. But definitely Voidfall. Voidfall was being played a lot. And Graham says, what games were played the most at GridCon, both in terms of the library checkouts and from what I saw being played? So, Graham, I don't know if you've seen it, but I did post a list of stats for you. But if you're a patron supporter... and you want to know what games were booked out of the library at GridCon, I have actually done a spreadsheet. I have got this information. I will just go through some of it here. So these are games that were booked out from the library or the Hot Games library. And thank you very much, Chrissy, for putting this together. Where is it? GridCon 4 library bookings. And I think there is a question later on, actually. Let me just zoom ahead to later on, because I think... somebody has a question. Yeah, Paul Kelly wants to know, what game, if any, are you surprised was not taken out of the library during GridCon? And which surprised you that it was so popular? So let's answer all of that in one. So this is just the games that were booked out of the library. So if I can say, for example, Voidfall is not on this list. And it was one of the games most played at GridCon. Because I didn't bring my copy of Voidfall. But at one point, I think it was being played 5 times at the same time across different rooms. So yeah, it was being played a lot. I also saw Hegemony being played a lot. It was probably played about, I don't know, 8 times maybe over the weekend. But my copy was only borrowed out of the library 3 or 4 times. But a lot of people had brought their own copies. So lots of Voidfall, lots of Hegemony. I was very surprised that Splendor Duel, which was one of the most popular games from the GridCon library last year, that actually got booked out the library more the game more than anything else. Now, it is a short game, and it is a two-player game, and a lot of people are there in couples who just want two-player games. So that was good. World Wonders was the most played hot game, which doesn't surprise me because it is fantastic. I'd been telling everybody how fantastic it was. And yeah, a lot of people came over to try it, and it doesn't take that long, and you can learn it from the rulebook. Evenfall was played 11 times, which was the second most popular hot game. Nucleon was only played 7 times. Now, that's interesting because I'm pretty sure, I mean, it is like a 3 or 4 hour game, but I'm pretty sure that Nucleon was booked out more than 7 times, to the point where we ended up with 2 copies in the hot games library at one point. Gin was borrowed 6 times. That is a bit of a surprise. I mean, I'm glad of that because it's a good game. But yeah, Beer and Bread was also borrowed 7 times, which was popular last year. And Project L was borrowed 8 times from the library. That's surprising. That is surprising. So, moving down to the bottom of the list, games which weren't taken out of the library at all, which I thought they would be. Let's have a look. So, Agricola 15, Amsterdam, Australia, Bonfire, Boone Lake, Brass Lancashire, Brick and Mortar, Codenames. Codenames. I'm surprised Codenames didn't get taken out, but it's kind of been superseded. Dice Manor, Distilled, Dominant Species Marine. I'm surprised that didn't get booked out because I thought I brought that specially. Gap. I am surprised Gap didn't get booked out. It is a little card game. Maybe because it's a little card game, people didn't know what it was. Imperial Steam, Key Market, Cocopelli, Le Granja, Magnate the First City, Marvel Age of Heroes, Miabi, Murder Party Pocket Deadly Sin, Palais Royal, Pandemic, Ponzi Scheme, Princes of Florence, Red Cathedral Expansion. So Red Cathedral was booked out, but not the expansion. Solar Sphere, Stick'em. I'm surprised Stick'em didn't get booked out. Super Skill Pinball, The Crew, Mission Deep Sea, The Glade, Virtual Revolution, Woodcraft and Zapotec. So out of those, which ones are surprising to you? Which ones out of that list that I've just read out are surprising to you that they weren't booked out of the library? And in fact, let's talk about the contest. Let's interrupt the live Q&A and talk about the contest. Every month, as part of these live Q&As, I give away £50 worth of games vouchers from Gameslore. Thank you very much, Gameslore, for sponsoring the show. Gameslore provide £25 worth of the vouchers, and then I add £25 of my own money. And each month, one of you who is watching this, either watching this live or watching this back afterwards, will win £50 worth of vouchers. Vicky is going to put in a link into the chat, and it's in the description of the video already. And the answer to the secret question is, which game from that list that I've just read out are you most surprised was not booked out of the GridCon library? I'm just going to go through the list again. It is Agricola, Amsterdam, Australia, Bonfire, Boone Lake, Brass Lancashire, Brick and Mortar, Codenames, Dice Manor, Distilled, Dominant Species Marine, Gap, Imperial Steam, Key Market, Cocopelli, Le Granja Deluxe, Magnate the First City, Marvel Age of Heroes, Miabi, Murder Party Pocket Deadly Sin, Palais Royal, Pandemic, Ponzi Scheme, Princes of Florence, The Red Cathedral Expansion, Solar Sphere, Stick'em, Super Skill Pinball, The Crew Mission Deep Sea, The Glade, Virtual Revolution, Woodcraft and Zapotec. So it's which one are you most surprised was not booked out? Anyway, good luck to everybody entering the contest. The contest will close probably at the end of December. We'll be doing a live Q&A between Christmas and New Year. And I'll be doing the draw before that. Right, let's get back to the questions. So, from Nick, what is your favourite high-complexity game that has a short setup time? Oh, this is where I really needed to have not had a nap this afternoon. I fell asleep this afternoon. He's thinking somewhere between the 15 to 20-minute window, or make your own judgment for what you think is a short time. This is actually a good question for the guild, because I'm not going to be able to answer this question now, but let's move this over to the guild. So this can be a good question for the guild. So your favourite high complexity game that has a setup time, let's restrict it even further. Maybe, can we say 10 minutes? Are there any high complexity games that take 10 minutes or less to set up? maybe we need to say 15. So I can't think of one offhand, because normally the complexity of a game and how long it takes to set up, those two things normally are sort of hand in hand. And some of the games that I've played recently have like a... I mean, some people might say you can set up Voidfall in 15 minutes. I don't think you can. And we're not talking Voidfalls here, because Voidfall to me is a 20, 25 minute setup. Frostpunk is like a 30, 35 minute setup. Any Lacerda game is probably... And this is setting up on your own. This is not setting up with four people all helping out, because you could probably do a complex game in 10 minutes. So yeah, it's a good question. First game that comes to mind for him is Spirit Island. Yeah, Spirit Island I think is a good one. I don't think Spirit Island has that much actual setup. Too Many Bones can also have a fast setup if you don't sort out the baddies. But sorting out the baddies is part of setup, and that can take a while. I do remember, talking of games with a long setup, at Essen this year, we did the setup for Age of Innovation. So Isaac Childress had offered to come to our hotel and teach us how to play Age of Innovation. And while he was on his way, we thought, well, we'll do the setup to save him time. And oh God, the setup took ages. It's a complicated game, but there was so much going on. Take these tiles, shuffle them, take out 10 at random, then divide them into stacks, then place the stacks on here, then take the top four of each stack and place them on the spaces here. That's just one thing. And you had like 25 different things to do. So, yeah, there are some games with very long setups. I mean, you look at Frostpunk. The first time I played Frostpunk solo after working on it for ages, it took me about 50, 55 minutes. It's a beast of a game. Beast of a game. Right. Next question from Joanna. What are your favourite medium weight Euros to play with two players? Oh, gosh. I might have to get back to you on that one. A favourite medium weight Euro. I mean, what I'll do is I will just quickly go over to my collection at Board Game Geek, because I don't normally play games two player. Three player, I think, is the sweet spot for games. So if I just go to my collection, and I'm going to sort it by my rating. Okay. So, and you're asking for medium weight. Yeah, medium weight Euro. So not Mage Knight. Medium weight Euro. Medium weight Euro. Trajan. Trajan is one of my very, very highly rated games. I think Trajan's probably medium weight. Maybe medium to heavy. And it plays really well at two players. Unlike some of the other Feld games, Trajan actually does scale very well two, three or four players. So definitely Trajan. Great Western Trail is probably heavy. I think also Kalus 1303. So Kalus, interestingly enough, the original Kalus was 2 to 5 players. The new Kalus is also 2 to 5 players. There's a lot of people who say that Kalus doesn't work at two players. Those people are wrong. Because Kalus works fantastic at two players. It's not as interesting, but it works brilliantly with two players. And I remember way, way, way back when I was playing the original version of Kalus on a website. I can't even remember which website it was. I think it was probably Boitageur. No, it wasn't Boitageur. It would have been Brettspielveld, when that was like the real place that you played online gaming. And I must have played it about 300 times. And most of those were two-player games. It is extremely good at two players. It's a very different game. It's very tactical. And the actions that you can take in a game which are there directly to hurt the other player, which you wouldn't normally do in a 3 and 4 player game, it's part of a two player game. So yeah, Kalus at two player is exceptionally good. So I'm going to say Trajan and Kalus 1303. Kalus 1303, I think, is medium weight. The original Kalus, I would probably say, is heavier. We've answered Paul's question. Next question from Nick. What would you recommend as a gift for someone that knows that they are buying for is really into board games, but don't know what games they have? Oh, right. So a gift for somebody, you know that they're really into board games, but you don't know what games they have. Are there any accessories or items that you can use across multiple games that you really enjoy or you would want yourself? Well, first of all, I don't generally buy presents for people, and I don't like it generally when people buy presents for me. This sort of goes together with the fact that I'm not really a big Christmas person. I have a real hang-up on people getting me gifts that I don't want, because I get all of those negative feelings. It makes me feel bad because they've taken their time, they've spent their money, and they've bought something for me that I don't want, or I've already got, or I don't need, and now I've got more stuff in the house. So please don't buy me any gifts unless they're edible. If you buy me edible gifts, then great, because then I can eat them. but I'm the same with buying gifts for other people. I don't like doing it because, again, the reverse of it. It's just that pressure to get it right. So I'm not the right person to ask for advice on gifts, because even if you say, oh, buy them a nice dice tray, or buy them some component holders, what happens if they've got a nice dice tray and they don't need another one? What happens if they've got all of the component holders? So for me, I don't know. I'd get them a voucher. I'd contact your local friendly game store and I would get them a voucher, because then they can buy whatever they want to buy, and therefore you've given them something which they are going to use and they are going to enjoy because they get what they want. That's what I always do. Always go for vouchers. Next question from Angus. What is your plan for Christmas and New Year's Eve of this year? Well, we talked about this earlier on today, in the fact that we currently don't have one. Well, we know we do. We have a rough plan of when we're going to Vicky's parents, which will be Christmas Eve. We've decided this year that we're not doing Christmas dinner. So traditionally, Vicky's parents do a Christmas Eve thing, and that is effectively the Christmas dinner on Christmas Eve. And then last year and the year before, we did a Christmas Day thing. But once we'd got back from the Christmas Eve thing, we're absolutely shattered because we don't get back till midnight. And the last thing that Vicky wants to do is spend all day Christmas Day basically cooking. So we've decided this year we're not doing anything on Christmas Day. We're going to have like spaghetti bolognese out of the freezer or something. Yeah, we're going to basically just, you know, have just cheaty food out of the freezer. And we're going to have a nice relaxing day on Christmas Day and not really do very much. But then Boxing Day will be our Christmas meal and everything else. New Year's Eve, we will be having friends over for a get together. We've done that every year for the last 4 or 5 years. We haven't really told anybody yet, but we will be doing that New Year's Eve. In terms of other things, any special programs planned for the channel? We were talking about this yesterday. I'd like to do something. And I will put it up to my Patreon supporters to vote on what we want to do. What I don't want to do is I don't want to create more stress and more pressure for me. I am currently way, way behind on my work, as I was this time last year, unfortunately. And that means it's very difficult for me to switch off and relax during that Christmas period. And even though they are really enjoyable, doing a live stream of like one of the Fighting Fantasy books, you know, every day at 3 o'clock for an hour and a half or something like that, is additional pressure, because I've got to make sure I get up and make sure I look myself, you know, presentable, which I might not do if I wasn't doing the live stream. And then what if we don't get it finished? What if I do 3 or 4 of them and we don't actually get it finished? I've then got this drive to actually complete it. So yeah, I'd like to do something between Christmas and New Year, and I've had a couple of thoughts, but I haven't fully decided exactly what I want to do. I have also thought this year that I might make it Patreon only. Not for any reason other than I just wanted to say an extra thank you to all of my Patreon supporters for basically allowing me to do what I do. So I think I might do it as some Patreon bonus streams this year. There is a lot less pressure on doing that as well than doing it as a public stream. So yeah, we'll see. Mats is saying, will there be a best games of 2023 list as voted on by patrons on the channel in December? That is one of the things which I did last year, and I would like to do that this year. It was a huge amount of work last year, and I was very happy with the one last year. I got Devon from Devon Talks Tabletop to join me, and we did a remote connection, and I was really happy with it. In terms of the metrics on that video, it massively underperformed compared to everybody else who's doing top 10 lists. And I don't do it for the views, but I put a huge amount of work into that video. And it just, as I say, everybody else was doing a top 10 and it was getting 2 to 3 times the views. And it's like, okay, was it really worth the 2.5 days that it took me to plan, prepare, and then do that video? So I'd like to do one, but when I've got to basically carve out time, which I don't have to do it, I'm not sure. So yeah, we'll see. gazing into the crystal ball of 2024, which trends do I think we will see in the board game space next year? No idea. Absolutely no idea. As far as I know, from my limited knowledge of the games which I know are coming out yet next year, I'm not seeing any trends as such. I don't think we're going to see more cooperative games, more flip and write games, more app-based games. I'm not seeing any trends. If you are seeing any trends in the gaming hobby for what's going to be big in 2024, let me know. But I think we're at a stage now where we have too much of everything. We have too many campaign games. We have too many this, too many that. So I think it's just going to continue. I think there's just going to be more of everything. Kickstarter's not going to slow down. GameFound's not going to slow down. We're just going to get way more games than any of us ever need. And the final question that was asked on the Guild, and this was actually asked after I closed the questions, but I've sneaked it in there. This is from Bart. He's recently removed the expansions from several games because they pushed the game's complexity rating a lot more than they expected. Now, these are games where he says they loved the base games, but then when they added the expansion, they were surprised about how much more difficult and less enjoyable the game became. This has led him to think, should an expansion keep the complexity relatively close to that of the base game? Because if you like a certain complexity rating, you buy a game that has that complexity rating rather than a game that needs an expansion to get to that level. It's a good point. You advertise a game, Great Western Trail, for example. Great Western Trail has a complexity rating of whatever, I don't know. But then you buy the Rails to the North expansion, and the Rails to the North expansion, although I've not played it, I know that it adds complexity. It adds extra rules. So I get what you're saying, and I feel something similar. And this is the real dichotomy of expansions for games. And I have recently picked up the expansion for Revive, Boon Lake, Bitoku, Ark Nova. I think that's it. Right, so let's pick on those. So Revive, I think, is a fantastic game. Bitoku, fantastic game. Boon Lake, I'm not going to say fantastic. I need to play it more. I really enjoyed it. And Ark Nova, great game. I got expansions for all four of those games recently. Now, does Boon Lake need an expansion? No. Does Bitoku need an expansion? No. Does Revive need an expansion? No. Does Ark Nova need an expansion? No. None of those games need expansions. I will happily play any of those games multiple times. None of them needed an expansion. But they all have an expansion, and I've got those expansions. And this is the thing, because you get a game, you like the game, you've played it enough times, you think, oh, there's an expansion for it, I'll buy it. And I think what Bart's saying, and I'm interested to see what anybody else thinks about this, sometimes don't buy the expansion. Even if you like the base game, even if you love the base game, sometimes an expansion is a bad thing, because it raises the complexity rating. Some do. There are some expansions that just give, here's a bunch of extra cards with no extra rules. We're not talking about those expansions. We're talking about expansions which add another few minutes to the teach, or another 5 minutes to the teach, because there is more stuff to do. And then you have the problem that I always have in that, oh, such and such of people are coming around tonight. What do they want to play? Oh, they want to play Bitoku. Do I get the expansion out? No, do I not? I no way I'm going to get the expansion for Bitoku out, because Bitoku is already a heavy game. There's already a lot going on. So I generally do not teach expansions to people with their first game. Now, there are some exceptions. Dune Imperium, for example, Do you include the first expansion from your first play? Yeah, I think you could. Do you include the second one? No. In my opinion, you should not include the Dune Imperium second expansion with your first play. In fact, I think Dune Imperium was best after the first expansion. Second expansion has some good stuff in it, but anyway. There we go. Controversial answers, controversial questions. That is everything from the questions that I've been asked in advance on BGG. And this is the point where we normally talk about the contest, but we've already talked about the contest. But what I will say is that earlier on today, I did the draw for the contest for last month. And congratulations to Craig. Craig Cameron won. He correctly answered the secret question last month. And thank you very much, Craig, for your support. I will get in contact with you later on, and you will get £50 worth of game vouchers. Let us know what you buy with them. And just as a reminder for this month's contest, anybody can enter. The link is in the description of this video, and you need to tell me which game that was not booked out of the GridCon library was more of a, was the biggest surprise to you that it wasn't borrowed from the library. I'm not going to go through the list again, but Chrissy, could you find the timestamp where I talk about and give that list? And if you pop that in the video as well, just so people can find that particular list of games. I'll be doing the draw probably near the end of December. So even if you're not watching this live, if you're watching this back later, or if you're listening to this as a podcast, you've got basically 4 weeks to enter the contest. So good luck to you. If you are a patron supporter of mine, please let me know when you fill in the form and you will get two entries into the hat instead of one. So there's a double chance to win for patron supporters. Right. So questions that we've been asked in advance. Now, where's my water? I don't have any. Right. So Coramore says, To my knowledge, has a designer ever selected purple as a player colour because of you? No. There you go. Nice and simple answer. Purple is one of those colours which is in some games, but I am 99.999% sure that, and it wouldn't actually be a designer that would choose that, it would actually be the game's publisher. I don't think any game's publisher has ever made any colour choices of components because of me. Next question from Rick. What game shall I get my dad as a Christmas present for around 30 quid? I don't know. Ask me tonight. I mean, I'd have to know what games he's already got, what games he's played before, and what games he has enjoyed playing. My default answer would be something like Just One, So Clover, It's a Balloon, things like that. Which are games which he could then actually play and teach other people without you needing to be there. Next question from Mindy. How much sleep did Paul get during GridCon? Was I able to play any games? And if so, what was my favourite memory from GridCon? So I talked a little bit about GridCon earlier on. Favourite memory from GridCon definitely has to be the seeing groups of people playing games that are patron supporters that have got to know each other, some of which had met before and some of which met for the first time. That was really, really heartwarming, really, really nice to see. Did I get much sleep during GridCon? I got more than I did, I think, at the previous one. I don't normally, because I have a lot of things going on my mind, which means I'm very restless during the night. And there were definitely two nights where I was just awake every half hour and didn't get sleep till like 3 a.m. or something ridiculous. It's just the way it is. I'm the same pretty much whenever I go away to any convention. Was I able to play any games? Yes. So I actually played a few games because this year I was actually doing a lot less of the demoing that I did last year, which means I had a lot more free time to go around, speak to people and everything else. And that worked really well. But it did mean that on the Friday night and the Saturday night, when basically everything was running and everybody was here and there was nothing to do, I was like, well, I'm going to play a game because, you know, we're all done. And I actually played Anno 1800, which a couple of people wanted to learn how to play. And I said, well, I'll teach you. And then I thought, well, hang on a minute. I'm not doing anything else. I might as well play. So I played Anno 1800. It reminded me how good the game was. I also played World Wonders, which is fantastic. So World Wonders is probably my favourite game that I played over Great Gone. I think it's an absolutely solid game. Really good. I also played a couple of rounds of It's a Balloon as well. So that was fun. But yeah. Next question from MU Jedi. What are my thoughts on the deluxe version of Food Chain Magnate, especially with a game that you might not get to the table very often? Well, speaking of a game that you might not get to the table very often, I know people who are huge, huge fans of this game and play it a lot. So for them, they are going to get it to the table very often. And for them, a deluxe version might be the thing. For your standard gamer that has 800 games in their collection, and if Food Chain Magnate only comes out once or twice a year, the deluxe version is down to, do you have the money and do you want that in your collection? You've got to make that decision yourself about whether it's worth it for you. For me, it's definitely not worth it because I don't like the game. I tried playing the game multiple times. I wanted to like it. I tried to like it. And eventually, I went off it for the same reasons why I go off a lot of splatter games. So for me, it's a no. But I did have a quick look at the campaign the other day, and it's made a massive ton of money. Now, I have thoughts on deluxe versions of games, which is probably a 10 or 15 minute rant, which I'm not going to do now. So this isn't anything particularly against Food Chain Magnate, but it's games like that. We don't need them. We don't need $100, $200, $300 versions of games. We don't. We want things to look nice. Yes. But we don't need that deluxification. I think one of the things in the hobby, one of the trends in the hobby that I don't like, is that we are over deluxifying. And I understand why, and I know the industry, and I know how it works, but I don't like it. I want good quality components. I want good thick cardboard. I want wood, silk screen printed, or whatever. I want good quality components. We all want good quality components. But I don't think any of us need absolutely over the top, over blinged. Why? Here's a game. It's a perfectly good game. Here is the game. Or here's another version of the game for twice the price. Because it looks nice. Anyway, as I say, I'm not going to rant too much. But we don't need them. Spend your time making better rule books and good graphic design and good games and get them tested, and spend less time working on the bling. Unfortunately, that's not how the Kickstarter market works. Kickstarter and all crowdfunding platforms rely on bling to make money. Doesn't matter how good the game is, doesn't matter. And that's down to our fault as human beings. Right, anyway, moving on. Rick says, how would you look to balance a prototype of a game? Is there more of a maths solution to balancing? And is there ever a case that it's okay for a game not to be balanced? Few questions there. And I think Rick, I think Rick might be a bit of a leading question, because Rick is currently designing his own game. So there's a few things here. And I was having this discussion with somebody last week or the week before about Steffenfeld games. So in a lot of Steffenfeld games, which generally are point salads, most of them are, you look at these things and you look at this thing and you're like, okay, well, if you manage to collect, let's say Castles of Burgundy. So in Castles of Burgundy, whenever you complete a full set of one of the tiles and you've covered your board with all tiles of a particular type, you get one of these bonus tiles. Now that bonus tile is worth 5 points in a two-player game, 6 points in a three-player game, and 7 points in a four-player game. I do not have the ability as a designer to understand or even calculate how many points something like that should be worth. Now, certain people are very good at that, Steffenfeld being one of them. And I am sure that there is definitely some kind of maths behind it. But certain people, certain designers are able to understand how many points a certain thing should be worth. And I don't know how they do that, but they do. So there's a few ways to balance your game. One way, if you have the ability, if you have the capability to think that out, then you just need to do it. If you don't have that, which I don't, which is one reason why I gave up, The only way to do it is by getting that game played repeatedly, dozens and dozens and dozens, if not hundreds of times, by people who are properly able to test your game. And not many people can actually test the game properly to the level that it needs to be tested, which is why these days we have so many games coming out that are broken and unbalanced. What it needs is it needs really, really good playtesters, not just you or me, but people who are actually good playtesters to play that game dozens and dozens of times and then come back to you and say, I think this card should be worth 4 points instead of five. And that's why I didn't bother with game design in the end, because it's just, how am I going to be able to put so much effort in to know whether something is worth 4 points or 5 points? Is it ever okay for a game not to be balanced? Absolutely. Depends on your target audience. If we go back to the games that I was playing when I was 13, 14, 15 years old, and these games are still around now. There are still games out there now which are unbalanced. And there's two ways of looking at this. First of all, you have a new game that's just come out. It's called Forest Shuffle, and apparently it's unbalanced. Apparently it's broken, and if you get the wolves and the deer, you win. Right, apparently. Lots of people are saying this. But that's a problem, and hopefully they're going to tweak it or errata it or release an expansion to fix it or whatever. But on the other side of it, you have games coming out which are not the kind of games that I would ever play, but these are more your, you know, things like Betrayal at House on the Hill, right? Those games are not balanced because they don't need to be balanced. The people who are going to play that game aren't looking for a balanced game. They're just looking for an experience. They're looking for something fun. So, games do not need to be balanced. And there is a game that both of us know very well, which is called Aeon Trespass Odyssey, which is very, very not balanced. But does it need to be balanced? It doesn't, because that's the nature of the game. So it is okay depending on the game. If you're talking about Cosmic Dragons, I would say it needs to be balanced. Anyway, Matt says, what kind of jewellery is Vicky making? I can't hear what she's saying. If you want to put in there, I can read it. Or Matt, you can ask her later on. Next question from Rick. Shall we move ATO to Wednesdays? No, because Vicky's using the car when she goes to the jewellery. Yes, already thought about that. Next question from Peter. Carnegie or Sky Mines for solo play? Carnegie. Both of those games are great. I love both of those games, both Carnegie and Sky Mines. But I believe that Carnegie is probably better for solo play because Sky Mines is better at four players, great with four, good with three, okay with two. And the solo mode for Sky Mines is effectively a two-player game. Now, if you wanted to, you could print off more of the solo cards and you could actually play Sky Mines with three automated opponents. That would be quite cool. But straight out of the box, Carnegie, for solo play. So to answer your question, Matt, it's silver jewellery. And it's a combination of rings, earrings, bracelets. What else? Necklaces? Anything. Silver jewellery, basically. Right, next question from Dimitri. There are so many cosplay contests, but nobody's cosplaying board games. What board game character or image could be the best for becoming a cosplay suit? Oh, that's interesting, that. Yeah, you don't really get that, do you? I mean, I don't go to places now where you see much cosplaying. In fact, Essen used to be. You used to go to Essen and there used to be a number of people as cosplay, but you don't get it as much. But it was generally the typical, fantasy and stuff like that. But I have seen some people cosplaying as things like, you know, Warhammer 40K and things like that. So there is some board game cosplaying. That might be a good question for the guild, I think, just because, again, I'm not sure I can answer that. But what board game character could be the best for a cosplay suit? I think some of the ones from Anachrony might be quite cool. If you've got an Anachrony cosplay suit, that would be quite cool. Chrissy says characters from Scythe. Rick says cosplay for Arkham Horror. Yeah, I think the Arkham Horror one's a bit easier, though. That's just like a 1920s investigator. Right, next question from Tropical Penguin. Any chance of another Voidfall playthrough? Well, I'm actually playing Voidfall twice this Sunday. I've no plans to do another playthrough on the channel. Again, it's just a case of time. I got so many games that I need to, well, and I want to get covered on the channel in the next month or two. Fitting another Voidfall playthrough is not something that I think I'm going to be able to do. I'd love to, so maybe next year, but I am actually playing it twice myself this Sunday, but not here. I'm going somewhere else to play it. Next from Monica. Any big non-gaming events taking place before Christmas? Not here, not as far as I know. No, we don't have any non-gaming event. In fact, we don't. I don't do any events really that are not gaming. We're going to see a show. What show are we going to see? Forgotten. Is it a comedy show or a drama show? We're going to see a show. I can't remember what show it is. Oh, it's a classical music. Was it The Planets? Vicky's going to tell me. Oh, it's Hans Zimmer. Yeah, that's it. Hans Zimmer music. We're going to go into Bristol for the night to see some Hans Zimmer classical music from films. Yeah. Other than that, I don't think there's anything really we've got planned. Lee is asking, what are my top three social deduction games? Now then, Lee, I don't play social deduction games because I don't like them. They trigger all of my anxiety issues. So as for the top three social deduction games, I can't really answer that. I know that people are out there and I know people are playing them, but I don't play those games myself. Ones that I have played in the past, I've played a lot of Werewolf in the past. I've played a lot of Resistance. Blood on the Clock Tower, I would say, is probably very high up there. I don't play it. I don't like it. I say I don't like it. I know I wouldn't like it, so I've never played it. But definitely Blood on the Clock Tower is something that a lot of people rave about and rate very highly. So I think that's probably high up there. But no, that's not really a question I can answer because I don't play those games. Ricky's asking, what is the best game set in space, followed by what is the best game with dragons in it? Well, the best game set in space is probably Star Wars Outer Rim, and the best game with dragons in it is probably Gloomhaven. So there we go. Next question from Frederick. Do we plan any New Year's adventure stream this year? Ah, we answered that earlier on, I think. Yes. Yeah, I answered that earlier on, Frederick. So I will be doing, well, I want to do something because I skipped last year. But as I say, if I'm going to do the top 10 games of 2022, it's just fitting it all in. And yeah, we'll see how we get on. But I've recently come into possession of a lot of fighting fantasy books. So a friend of mine, one of my patron supporters, Chris, was clearing out his uncle's house, and he had a lot of fighting fantasy books. And he basically said, Paul, do you want them? Because we're clearing them out and I want to make sure they go to a good home. And I said, yeah, sure, that's fine. And then I got given two massive boxes of fighting fantasy books. So I now have approximately 90% of the fighting fantasy books, the numbers 1 to 59. So I've got plenty to choose from if we decide that we're going to do something like that. Next question from Michael. I know it's early, but this year you had pre-booked a playthrough of Nucleum at Essen. Will there be a similar thing for 2024? How do you book, and is it through Patreon? So good question, Michael. So I can tell you now that I haven't yet decided who I'm going to be demoing for at Essen this year. It's too soon for me to decide because it will depend on which publishers want me to demo for them and what games they have. One thing that I'm in a position to be able to do now is I can basically choose who I want to demo for based on the offers that I get. And a few publishers contacted me and wanted me to demo for them. And when Board and Dice contacted me, who are one of my clients and I get on really well with them, Nucleum was the game that they said we'd like you to demo this game. Now, me demoing Nucleum is very, very rewarding because it's a heavy game, it's a complex game, and the way that they wanted the demos run were exactly the style that I like to use for for my demos. So it was a perfect fit, and that's why I chose to demo Nucleum for Board and Dice this year. Next year, I don't know. I don't know. I could be demoing for Board and Dice again. I might be demoing for Czech Games Edition. I might be demoing for Chip Theory Games. At this stage, I don't know who I'm going to be demoing for. I won't decide that until probably around the summertime. In terms of the bookings, the way that I like to do it best is that I like to give, again, my patron supporters, because without my patron supporters, this channel doesn't exist. So as a thank you to them, I like to give them the first opportunity to get a demo of the game from me at Essen. The way that it worked this year is that meant there were no slots for anybody else, but it did mean that my demo table was booked all the time, full with people, and it was all in a structured slot, which suits me a lot better, rather than it being, you know, just, you know, people come up, get a demo, right, the demo's finished, they move on, next people turn up. Yeah. Now, some people might look at that and think it's not fair that I'm only doing demos for my patron supporters, but they had three tables demoing Nucleum. It was only my table that I was doing bookings on. Anybody could have got a demo of Nucleum, but I felt that it was fair to give my patron supporters the first chance to book spaces for me. And I will likely do the same next year. Next question from Monica. Monica has started Heroes of Rowan, which you bought because of me. Have I continued my quest? I haven't. Yeah, again, it's just down to time. I remember enjoying it, but I don't actually have any time to sit down and play through those books myself. So, yeah, just time again. Julius is asking, how was GridCon? I talked about GridCon earlier on, so if you are still with us, Julius, skip back a bit. Well, about maybe an hour. I did talk about GridCon quite a bit at that point. Next question from Shizza. If you look back some years, board games have been quite different. Less rules, often less beautiful, and mostly less production value. What do you expect for the future of board games? Well, first of all, I absolutely agree with you. And this was brought very much to light when we got out, when every so often on the channel, and I've not done one of these for a while because of time, but we do this thing called Cult of the Old, where I get a game from 15 years ago and we play it on the channel. And over the last year or two, we've covered some great games. And the last one I remember covering was Taj Mahal. Now, Taj Mahal came out 20 years ago, 22 years ago, something like that. And we got it back. We got it out. And I remember playing Taj Mahal when it came out. And at the time, I was thinking, okay, this is a game of this level of complexity. And it was only when we got it out again after 20 years and went, wait a minute, compared to most other games that are out right now, this is simple. This is almost lightweight or light to medium. And at the time, that's what the complexity of games was. So going back 20, 23 years, 25 years, whatever, the games that were coming out, the standard Euro game that was coming out back then, I think was generally speaking a lot lighter than the games we've got coming out now. And I think that is because these days, most games coming out, not all of them, but most games, the designers have to go, oh, and we need to put that in. Oh, and we need to make it interesting. So we'll have this, and we'll have this other lever. And if you pull this lever, this marble runs down this track, and then you'll get 2 points if it drops into that hole, or, oh, let's do this. I've got an idea. Let's put a twist on this mechanism and make it more complicated. Games don't need to be as complicated as they are. Some of them are great, and I still enjoy the meaty complex games. But yeah, games from back then do have less rules. The production values are definitely less than they were. Less time is spent on artwork and graphic design and things like that. But yeah, it is just how it is. What do I expect for the future of board games? As I mentioned earlier on, I expect the future of board games to continue exactly as it has been done. We are going to get lots and lots of games coming out. The production values are going to be generally higher. The artwork is going to be generally better. The games are going to be generally more complex. And we are still going to have a lot of games which are more expensive than they need to be. because they've got unnecessary bling, I think. Rick's asking, what's on my mug? This mug is actually Dungeon Pets. Yeah, it's a Dungeon Pets mug, game from Vlady Shavatil. Stevie says, every year after Essen, there is a game I could have bought, thought better of, and then wish I had have gotten. Do I have such a game this year? I have a few. So one of the games which I actually said no to a review copy of was Rats of Wistar from Cranio Creations. And based on things that I have heard about it, I think I possibly should have said yes. Now, I'm happy that I said no. I'm comfortable with that because I already have just about enough games. Well, probably more games than I'm able to cover when you include the expansions. But from what I've heard about it, I kind of wish I had have picked it up. And there is another game, actually, which Adrian Gibson picked up, Satori, which I think was talked about a little bit the week before Essen. Very, very under the radar game. Not many people had heard of it whatsoever, but I looked at it. I thought, this looks interesting. I know Rado raved about it and said how good it was, but I was like, okay, I'm going to make a decision and I'm going to say no on this one. And I could have done. I could have gone up to them and had a discussion with them and approached them and whatever, but I decided not to because I was already coming home with 20 new games. Thankfully, Adrian brought it back and Adrian says it's fantastic. So, yeah, those couple probably are ones which, if I was less concerned about how many games I was bringing back, I would have probably gone for those. Bald Spill says, how many Jaffa Cakes should one consume over a period of 1 year? How many should you consume? Well, I'm not here to tell you your dietary habits, but I think one a day keep the doctors away is the phrase. Mark is saying he watched my video for the White Castle playthrough and he's just ordered the game. How did you determine what dice got rolled in different rounds? Well, I've done two White Castle playthroughs. So the first one was when Pete taught me how to play, and it was me, Pete and Dan. And then I did another one on the Wednesday before GridCon, where Justin, Andrew and Mark came over from Malta. They came all the way here just to play White Castle and then went home afterwards. No, they didn't. They stayed for GridCon. So I don't know which one you watched, but how did you determine what dice got rolled in different rounds? So you roll all of the dice at the start of the round. You roll all of the dice. You don't choose which ones to re-roll. You roll all of them at the start of each round. Did the Frostpunk board game is a good game? Yes, Frostpunk is fantastic. Have I played Team Fortress 2, the board game? I haven't. No. I didn't even know there was a Team Fortress 2, the board game. But yes, Frostpunk, the board game, is very good. Lee is asking, did I enjoy playing Sniper Elite? And are there any similar games in the genre? Now, Sniper Elite is a hidden movement style game. There are many, many hidden movement style games. It is a genre of game. So there's lots of them out there. Sniper Elite, I felt, was one of the better ones. And actually, I had a very different opinion on Sniper Elite than most other people. So Sniper Elite, one player plays the sniper, and then one to three players plays the Germans. And a lot of people were out there, including some reviewers, saying that this is really only a two-player game. One player playing the sniper, and one player playing all of the German squads. I completely disagree with that. I have played it one versus one, and I've also played it one versus two, and I've played it one versus three. And the one versus three experience was a much, much better gaming experience for me. It was a longer game because the three that were playing the German squads, they were discussing things together, and that's what made the game great. Otherwise, sure, if you want games to be as quick as possible, if you think a game is good because it's shorter, play one versus one and sit there in silence. For me, the three players on one side trying to work out what was going on and where the sniper was, that was what made the game really good. I did enjoy Sniper Elite. I'm not generally a big fan of those games. I have to say that I thought the solo mode was extremely weak. I really did not enjoy the solo mode. I don't think the solo mode in the game works really at all, if I'm being completely honest, but the multiplayer experience was a good one. I think it's one of the better hidden movement games out there. The rule book wasn't clear, and there were definitely a few things where it could have been clearer as to... And I remember speaking to the designers and the publisher afterwards about a particular thing about how item cards are played, and they kind of said, yeah, we messed that up in the rule book. It's not clear what you're supposed to do. And I'm like, okay, yeah, good. That's not just me. But yeah, that was good. Next question from Mark. And we're going to wrap things up now. So if you've got any other questions, now is the time to ask. We've got about 5 minutes left. So Mark is saying, have I tried sea salt and paper? You might want to add it at family gatherings. So I haven't, but you saw it being played a lot or being talked about at GridCon. And I'd heard a few things about it. I don't know anything about it other than I think it's had an expansion set. So I thought it was a new game that's only just come out, but I really don't know much about it. But if Mark is saying we might want to add it at family gatherings, the thing is, we've got a number of games now. Whenever I go around to Vicky's family, we have just one. We've had just one for, 3 years now? And it's been fantastic. And they love it. And I think your mum and dad have now got a copy of it. Somebody else has got a copy of it. Maybe. No. Then So Clover came out. And we took So Clover. And they like So Clover just as much. Probably just as much. To the point where your mum and dad have now got So Clover. Beck and Lou have got So Clover. So, yeah. So we've got just one. We've got So Clover. In the past, we've played Codenames with them. Codenames doesn't get played anymore because we have just one and So Clover, which I think are better. And I've brought back It's a Balloon. Now, It's a Balloon I'm going to take with us next time we go for a family gathering. It's more on the silly end rather than the being clever end. But I think it's good fun. So we'll take that and we might play that for a bit. But we'll probably default back to just one and So Clover. So it depends. Sea Salt and Paper, I don't know. I need to see more about it to see what it is. And that's it. We haven't had any other questions come in. Go on, one more question. One more question before we disappear. We'll probably now get 10. Right, question from Daniel. So this is it. No more questions now. How do I learn so many games without having a video reference? Well, it's a good question, but to be fair, some of the games that I learn, there is a video reference. And if we refer back to the thing that I said earlier on, there are channels out there which I watch now and again who have done playthroughs of games which I am learning. So Tom Heath from Slicker Drips, Nithranya from Board Games in a Nutshell. Yeah, who else? Occasionally Rado, you know? He does get some rules wrong, but he always puts the subtitles on screen. So if I've got a game which I need to learn, I can't sit down and watch a video. Generally, what I will do is I will have a read through the rulebook, but then I will have somebody's video on in the background just while I'm tidying up, just to take some extra things in. So there is, you know, there are some videos out there for games which I am learning. So this Friday, for example, and if you're interested, I'm doing two playthroughs on Friday. First one, in the afternoon, Halls of Hegra. Second one, in the evening, Evenfall. Now, I'm quite lucky because this Friday afternoon, Pete is coming round and Pete is going to teach me how to play Halls of Hegra. So I'm not doing any preparation for that other than I'll set the studio up in the morning. But I am not learning the game in advance. If I was learning the game in advance, there are already some playthrough videos online. They're not official, they're not sponsored, so they're probably going to be errors in them. And I don't mean that in a critical way, because there's errors in all of my playthroughs. And then in the evening, I'm going to be playing Evenfall. And again, if I wanted to go online and find a video of somebody teaching me Evenfall, I'm pretty sure that there would be one there. But thankfully, Adrian's going to be doing the teach. So this Friday evening, well, in fact, this Friday, I'm covering two new games on the channel, and I'm not doing any of the teaching, which is great. There is a level of trust that I have in the other players, which has gone wrong before. I do remember that there was one playthrough that I did on the channel 2 years ago where I relied on a friend teaching me how to play, and we got three rules majorly wrong. Now, I didn't realise that until afterwards. So there is always a little bit of nervousness because ultimately it is my channel. And if I'm relying on somebody else doing the teach, but we've got the designer of Halls of Hegra is going to be joining us in the YouTube chat in the afternoon. So if we do get anything wrong, he can tell us. And we've got the publisher of Evenfall joining us in the chat on Friday evening for that playthrough. So again, it's a little bit of a safety net. If we do get something wrong, they can correct us. That's everything. So yes, just a couple of quick mentions before we disappear. First of all, as always, a big thank you to all of my Patreon supporters for funding the channel. This video, no sponsorship for this video whatsoever. In fact, it costs me money to make this video because I'm giving £25 worth of games vouchers away, added to the £25 coming from GamesLore. All of that is only possible thanks to the support of the Patreon campaign. And even if you aren't able to financially support me on Patreon, you can head on over to the Patreon page and you can now join as a free member. Now, joining as a free member doesn't mean that you're going to get any of the perks that Patreon members get, but you will get notifications. So every time I make a Patreon post, like today's live Q&A, you will get notified of that. So yeah, head on over to the Patreon page, join as a free member. But if you are able to support me financially, you will get access to the Slack channel, which is where the community is. You'll get to vote on what games I'm going to be covering on the channel, and various other things as well. So yeah, there is that. And the other thing is the contest. Again, if you're watching this video, please enter the contest. It's free to enter and you might win. If you are a Patreon supporter, you get two entries into the contest instead of one. We had a record 165 people entering last month. It's normally around 100 to 110, but we had a lot more people entering the contest last month. And as I mentioned, we have chosen a winner. Craig has won £50 worth of games vouchers from GamesLore. And you could win £50 of games vouchers from GamesLore too. It is available internationally. So don't think that if you're not in the UK, you can't enter. You can. And the £50 worth of vouchers means you can buy a decent game and pay for the postage. And yeah, anybody can join in. And Brett's saying, yes, we're doing a Heat tournament. So if you are on the Slack, if you are a Patreon supporter and you are on the Slack channel, one of the things that we do every so often, and Brett organises this, is we're doing tournaments of games on Board Game Arena. And the one that we're running at the moment is for Heat, which has a fantastic implementation on Board Game Arena. And you can sign up now. So if you're interested in playing Heat in the tournament and you are a Patreon supporter, head on over to the Slack channel and the details of how to do that are on there. That's it. Right. I'm going to be disappearing, going downstairs and getting some food. And then if you are a Patreon supporter, at 8 o'clock tonight, we're going to be doing a live stream of Aeon Trespass Odyssey, part 19 of our campaign, I think. We're going to be playing over Tabletop Simulator tonight, but I will be sending out a link to that shortly. That's everything. Thank you very much, everybody, for watching. And I will see some of you on Friday. Well, I'll see some of you tonight, maybe, but I'll see the rest of you on Friday for Halls of Hegrit in the afternoon and Evenfall in the evening. Take care. See you later. Bye-byes.